The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, Nadia Whitehead, intern for our daily news site, is here to talk about some recent stories. I'm Sarah Crespi. First up, we have a story on the power of pee, getting things up into space. People, fuel, water is incredibly expensive, both in terms of energy and financial cost. And humans, being mainly water, tend to have pretty heavy water demands. Now, researchers are looking into a way to stretch the space water supply a bit further by looking into urine recycling. Okay, Nadia, I thought that astronauts were already imbibing recycled urine, aren't they?
So you're right. Astronauts on board the International Space Station are currently recycling their urine to recover pure water. But right now, they're only recycling or recovering about 75% of the water in urine. NASA astronauts are hoping to recover 85% by next year, though.
While the reclamation process is happening, the question before us today is, can it be more efficient? What new tactics are the researchers in this study trying?
So apparently the recycling system can be more efficient. Right now, the space station is disposing of urea, one of the main compounds in urine. But urea can be used to generate power. Researchers have created a new technique that can filter out urea from urine, and they pass it through a device called a bioreactor. The device uses an enzyme that breaks down urea to convert 86% of the urea into ammonia.
So they're not just getting the water out, they're actually trying to get some energy out of this?
Right. So in addition to getting water, they're also trying to get power from our urine.
Okay. So this seems kind of Rube Goldbergian, you know, and taking water, purifying it, taking some of the salts and using those for power. How likely is this actually to become part of a space mission?
There are some doubts about how likely this is actually going to become part of a NASA space mission because there's very little electric power being generated, about 0.2 volts. Of course, they hope to improve this output of power over time, but some scientists say that urea is only a small amount of our urine, so is it going to be worth it in the long run? We don't know.
Next up, we have a story on love and glucose. This study brings up one of my favorite new words, hangry, a mixture of hungry and angry. You may recognize the feeling, you're hungry and suddenly you can't agree with anyone else about where to eat. And now there may be some science to back up this gut feeling. Okay, so before this study, Nadia, what do we know about the relationship between eating and agreeableness?
Well, I already knew that I get angry when I don't eat. But since the 1960s, scientists have suspected that low glucose levels may play a role in aggression. There have been two studies done in 2010 that measured vengefulness in people with type 2 diabetes and how giving sweetened drinks to strangers competing at computer tasks can actually make people more agreeable. So the higher someone's glucose levels are, the less likely they are to treat people aggressively.
Okay, so sugar may be a solution here. What's new in this study?
In this case, scientists wanted to check out how glucose levels affect couples, particularly married couples. So they recruited 100 married couples and gave them blood glucose meters to measure their glucose. And they also gave them some interesting supplies, voodoo dolls with 51 pins to measure how angry they were at the end of the day. So basically, the couples would measure their glucose levels in the morning and at nighttime. And at nighttime, they would also put pins into their voodoo dolls to measure exactly how angry they were at their spouse.
So these are some unusual measures. Was there actually a correlation between pins in doll and glucose in blood?
Yeah, they did find a correlation. Spouses with lower evening glucose levels showed a lot more anger and aggression and put in more pins than those who had higher glucose levels.
And what about this application of torturous noise that I saw in the study?
So they also had the couples come into their lab where they gave them the chance to blast their spouse with some ugly noises like ambulance sirens, dentist drills, and fingernails scratching a chalkboard.
We don't have a sample of that, do we?
No. So they found out that the same thing happened. If you have low glucose levels, you're more likely to blast louder and longer ugly noises at your spouse.
Okay, so this seems like an open and shut case. Hanger is a real thing. Do all the experts agree?
Right. It seems as though there's a connection between glucose and self-control, but not everyone agrees. For instance, some experts think this could just be one of the many factors that makes us more prone to be aggressive. For instance, alcohol can also make us more aggressive. The scientists in this case didn't measure if they were drinking alcohol or not at night. So scientists are suggesting more research needs to be done.
Finally, we have a story on the potential extinction of beards. Facial hair fashion, from eyebrow plucking to shapely beards, changes with the times. But what about humanity's opinion about facial hair? Is that as fickle as fashion? A new study has looked into this question from an evolutionary perspective. So, Nadia, can you give us some background on the principles at play here?
Sure. So there's a theory out there that says sometimes it may be bad to have a trait that's too popular. Here's an example. Guppies with rare colors are more likely to go unnoticed by predators because they don't stand out as much. However, as predators start to devour the fish with common colors, the rare-colored guppies thrive and pass on their colors and spread in the population. Once the rare color gets too common, the advantage disappears, and predators will start to chow down on them.
Okay, so that's an example of how being a rarity might be advantageous, but these are genes that we're talking about. How could this apply to hairy faces?
Yeah, so it's a little more complicated when it comes to beards. A fish's color is all about the genes it inherits, while a beard is more of an option. You either shave or you don't shave. But the same logic can be applied if the behavior influences the choice of potential mates. And it does. Someone can like beards or someone can't stand them. So in this study, researchers asked if a beard is still sexy if everyone has one.
So for the investigation, did the researchers just randomly apply beards to different people?
No. So they actually recruited men to grow them. Over time, they took images of the men during different periods of growth. They took images when they were clean shaven, when there was a light stubble, heavy stubble, and then a full out beard. They then showed the images to men and women in sets and asked them to rate how attractive they were. But there was a catch. The frequency of beardness in each set of photos varied. While some sets had pictures of men that were mostly clean-shaven, others saw sets that were mostly of men with beards.
So they were controlling rarity in these samples. Sometimes someone would see a bunch of clean-shaven people and then maybe one bearded fellow. What was the result? Is a rare beard more beautiful?
Yep, it sure is. It looks like when facial hair is rare, it's about 20% more attractive. But the same thing happens for clean-shaven folks. When practically everyone has a beard, clean-shaven faces are rated more attractive.
Okay, so is the takeaway here to grow a bigger, better beard, perhaps one of those fancy birdcage beards?
I'm not sure that's a safe bet, but the study does show that originality is important, even when it comes to beards. So you've got to figure out the best way to stand out in your particular crowd, beard or no beard.
Okay, so what else is on the site this week, Nadia?
So this week, we also have a story about how scientists may have observed a marmoset mourning the death of its partner. And there's also a new finding that suggests a particular gene is why women are more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease. In Insider, one of our latest stories is about how a T-Rex from Montana was just FedExed to Washington, D.C. to be put on display at the Smithsonian. So be sure to check out all these stories and more on the Science website.
Thanks, Nadia.
Thanks, Sarah.
Nadia Whitehead is the intern for our online daily news site. I'm Sarah Crespi. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.